This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. It's August 21st, 2019. Welcome to Bicycle Talk with, this week, my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. Welcome back, Fran. Welcome back.
Thanks.
A show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show or listening live, you can call us right now at 860-486-9487, or you can simply email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. If you're listening to this on podcast, you can send an email to the same, bicycletalk1@gmail.com, or you can visit and comment on Bicycle at Bicycle Talk on Facebook. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. Ron's rant of the week. So back on the a while ago, looks like it's actually code here is July 10th, but I think it was August 10th. But anyway, it doesn't matter. I made a comment about cyclists in my way. Didn't we just have this conversation? Didn't we just have this
a while ago? We sure did.
Right? So why do I want to bring this into my rant? Because it happened again. And this isn't just a Ron's rant of the week. This is also a frant of the week, too, because my lovely co-host, Dr. Storch, was with me on this particular.
Make it gender neutral and vague.
General neutral and vague. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. I can do that. A person driving an automobile pulled up alongside us. Actually, we're riding down. Anybody who's local out here, it is a state road. It is Route 203, and it intersects with Route 6, which is another state road, at a traffic light. So we were approaching that traffic light, and there is a left-hand turn lane there for people who are turning left onto Route 6. There is a straight-ahead lane, or it's not really defined as a straight-ahead and a right-hand turn lane, but there's enough space to allow a vehicle who is sitting in the center of that lane enough space so that someone to the right of them could actually make a right-hand turn on red after stop.
Yes, so indeed. So
there's plenty of room for that. So as a cyclist, and I teach this all the time, and I'm very, very aware of this and not blocking cars that might or trucks that might be coming up behind me, I will veer over into that center lane, and I'll sit there and I'll wait for the light to turn because I was going straight.
Veer is not a good word to use.
Okay.
People misuse that word a lot.
Okay, so just go ahead.
Okay, because if you really veered, that was not a good thing to do.
Okay, all right.
Because veering means when you veer, you're like making a sudden move off to the side.
It wasn't sudden at all. It was very predictable.
Was what we were accused of. That's why I'm saying don't even use the word because that's not what we did.
Okay, so what we did was I actually have a rear view mirror on my bike now because when I'm doing group rides, I kind of like to have an idea of who's behind me. So I use the mirror as much to my chagrin. I do not like using a mirror, but I do use the mirror now. And as I looked in my mirror, I could see that there was a vehicle coming up from behind, but it was a way back. And so I stuck my finger off to the left side, pointing to where I was going. And Fran and I both went over into that center lane and stopped at the traffic light to wait for it to turn green so that we could go straight across the intersection.
Well, and allow another vehicle to our right to make a right-hand turn.
We gave a lot of room for another vehicle, you know, more room than a car would give to another vehicle to come into our right-hand side, therefore being able to make a proper right-hand turn and having us not blocking the situation.
And they can make a right on red if they want to.
Right, and they can make a right on red.
Right.
So a person comes up and is driving a very large pickup truck. Why is it always a white pickup truck? Anyway, a very large white pickup truck, and that person was pulling a horse trailer. So there was, a fair amount of mass here that we're dealing with. They proceeded to call us out for cutting them off and telling us we should never pull in front of a vehicle of that size. You don't know what it takes to stop a vehicle like that.
Right.
My comment back was, would we be having this same conversation if we were a car?
And they said yes.
And they said yes, which is entirely wrong, because if we were visually a car, the braking would have occurred on that vehicle a long time earlier, because that vehicle probably would not have been able to get through on the right-hand side if there was a car there. But because there were two people on bicycles who were courteous enough to be able to give them the space to be able to make that turn, the driver of that vehicle felt that this was something that they needed to discuss with
us. So visually, she felt like we were cutting her off.
She?
So, ooh, yeah.
You told me not to do that.
Visually, that person felt like we were cutting her off. So they must have experienced us being on the right-hand side and then crossing over the lane. That's what they visually saw.
That is what they visually saw. Or my feeling is, and I think this is exactly what it is, I don't think the driver was paying very close attention to the road at the time, and then all of a sudden went, oh, yikes, there's bicycles. And
right.
I think we scared her.
Yeah.
And I really think that's what happened.
Right.
So,
and that may be what happened. But we have to think about this, though, because we're going down the road. We're approaching that intersection. We're on the right-hand side, and
correct.
there's cars behind us. And what they see is they see us going from the right-hand side of the road into the middle of the lane and then approaching that, that going into that left-hand. So it may have looked to her like we were cutting her off.
It may have looked that way. And what they also see is, oh, there's two bicycles. I'm just going to pass them and make a right-hand turn.
Because
that's their mentality. But how can I go straight if you're making a right-hand turn into me?
Right.
That's very, very dangerous, which is why I always move out into the center of that lane.
Right.
And that is, by the way, the League of American Bicyclists will teach you that is the proper way to handle
the
situation.
So my understanding that on the one hand, people behind you are responsible to not hit you.
That is correct.
And that if you are hit from the rear, that it's the fault of the person who is behind you. But now that I'm thinking about it, if we in fact were in front of her off to the right and then we crossed over the lane, I could see how that could have been distressing to her. I'm not sure what to do about that, because we were in the right in that we were doing what you said, in that we were moving into a lane to be out of her way so that she could make her right-hand turn.
We were.
But visually what she saw was, here we are in the right hand. We may have been ahead of her. We were in the right hand lane, and then we crossed over the lane.
We were quite a ways
to get
ahead
to her
of her,
left.
By the way, I saw her in the mirror. We were quite a ways ahead of her.
Probably a
half a dozen car lengths.
And
so,
her fear was that she was going to hit us because she had a massive
vehicle. Because she couldn't stop her vehicle.
Well, if
you're driving that fast to an intersection with a vehicle that large and you feel like you might not be able to stop it, maybe you should slow down.
Right. Then there's
that point.
And
the other thing is, we did properly signal. I have a flashing light on the back of my bike. We were very visible. There was no question about our visibility.
Yeah.
It was a question about her judgment.
Yeah.
And I think that's really what it comes down to here. So what do you do in a situation like that? Well, we had this conversation. She obviously did not want to hear what I had to say, but because she was just going to argue with me about it. And what I did was I didn't handle it well. I did say, you just have something against cyclists. I did say that.
Yeah,
which
you
I
did.
Probably shouldn't have
you
said
You were picking
that.
On cyclists.
You're
that's
picking
what you
on
said.
Cyclists. That's what I told her. And what I should have said instead is, what we did was proper by way of the law. If you would like me to call an officer, then we could have someone come here and explain to you how the law works.
Yeah, and
that's what I should have done. You got to try to be rational.
It isn't.
You got to try to be rational.
That isn't what you should have done. Unless you felt threatened by her, and she was not threatening us. What you need to do is you need to come down. You need to not react defensively.
I don't know. 8,000 pounds coming up on me on my bicycle, that's rather threatening.
What you have to—I understand, but I think what really happened was, this is a person who's not used to dealing with cyclists.
Mm-hmm.
She was, in fact, pulling a big truck with a trailer with horses in it.
Right.
And so it was a lot of mass. And I think you're right. We did frighten her.
Right.
She may not be used to accommodating cyclists. Like if she sees a cyclist in front of her,
I think that was
she
obvious.
She has to just be thinking about that. And she wasn't thinking about it. She thought about was, here we are on the right-hand side, and visually she saw us crossing over the lane, and it freaked her out.
Right.
So the thing is, the learning experience here is we need to be, we need to make sure that we're really, we're way ahead of the cars behind us, that
we
signal
were.
Very clearly, and we get over into that light right lane and give them space. That not everybody is going to understand what we're doing. So here we are right now, we're advocating for ourselves and saying, listen, this is what we do. When we approach an intersection, we want you, vehicles, we don't know if you're going to be going straight or if you're going to be turning left. So a lot of us now, what we do is we pull over into the left side of the right lane if we're going straight, so that you can get to our right side and make your right on red. That is what we are doing. We're not doing it to be in your way. We're not doing it to be obnoxious. We're signaling to get there. It's a learning experience, and hopefully she learned that. I don't know if she did, because everybody left in anger.
I am certain that she probably doesn't know things like the 3-foot rule. She probably doesn't know anything about bicycle law whatsoever. And the rights of a cyclist on the road. And I fault our Department of Transportation for that.
For people not
problem.
Knowing it.
Right.
Well, you
because
have another.
It could be very easily taught.
Well, there are a lot of people who don't ride bikes. And there are a lot of people who are angry that there are bikes on the road. And they
I
get
know.
Angry that there are bikes in their way. And there are a lot of people who are angry right now. Because angry is being fomented by
it's being generated
the economy,
our political atmosphere.
By the political atmosphere, and people are more apt to act out now. I feel like there's more
because
road rage
because it's been
there's
it's been approved.
There's a heightened environment of anger,
yeah,
and
I
so
think you're right. I think
if people
right.
feel like bikes are in their way, they're going to be more likely to
talk about it.
To talk about it. And this brings up another interesting point, which is the status of cycling as a sport in the public mind. You know, you know how we talked about this as when we came home. How people view bicycling and cyclists.
Right.
You know, people think it's fine to make fun of cyclists. They make fun of the way they dress. Oh, you think you're in the Tour de France. They make fun of Lycra. They make fun of chamois shorts.
And all I can say is, you can see me.
Right. Yes, indeed. They make fun of all. But you know how there are some marginalizations that are almost societally approved. Like it's a little more societally okay to shame elderly people. It's a little more societally okay to shame overweight people, which is not. It's absolutely
it's
not.
No.
But people think it's okay to make fun of old people. People make fun of how many times you've said to me, I'm so tired of them making fun of Bernie Sanders because he's old.
Right.
And then I get up in arms when people think it's fine. They would never say something about an ethnic group, but they would shame somebody who's overweight.
Right.
And they still think it's. And I've had men say to me, "I'm weightist," and they're proud of it. They don't like looking at fat women. So I think that cycling has a little bit of a status problem like that. You know, so people say to us, oh, you think you're in the Tour de France. And you said it to me the other day. If somebody's throwing a football around, do people say to
does
them,
does that mean they're
oh,
in the NFL?
You think you're in the NFL. If somebody goes to the baseball field, if somebody's playing catch with their kid, oh, you think you're in the
Major League Baseball.
Major League. Right. Or if the kids are throwing hoops, you think you're in the NBA. Nobody says that to them.
No.
But us, for some reason, they think it's okay to make fun of us.
Yeah.
And
that is very interesting.
That's right. That we, because we look funny, we're wearing these funny shorts, we're wearing these bicycles. But the big thing is what cars are already experience road rage at other cars.
Oh, boy, do they ever.
Now they have a vehicle that's a little vehicle that's in front of them that's vulnerable.
That's vulnerable.
And it's in their way.
Exactly.
And they're already angry.
Mm-hmm.
So now they're angrier. And they think, and they somehow think okay to get angry at us. And they're forgetting.
They have power. When they're inside of the metal box with the four wheels, they have power.
Do you know what we really
they're
should have
empowered.
Done? The very first thing we should have done with that encounter is, hi, I'm Fran, and this is Ron, my husband. What's your name?
We should have personalized it. You're right.
Yeah, that's the first thing that you do. As soon as she starts yelling at us, "Hi, my name is Fran. This is Ron. We live over on Bassett's Bridge Road.
How can I help you today?
And so that she's no longer looking at a bicycle. She's looking at a person.
At human beings, right? That's one thing that Amber Pierce used to say. You have to humanize the situation.
What's your name?
Shout out to Amber, by the way, if you're listening.
Who she is. And then as soon as we're people talking, maybe it de-escalates the situation. But that's something that we have to think about, that cars people are angry. People are angry in cars. It's like you said, they're not thinking about the fact that they could murder us in 2 seconds and we couldn't do a thing about it. Cars are huge. They weigh a lot. We're on the road. We're perceived as being in their way. And I know that there are people who are angry who one of their solutions is there should just be bike paths. I've heard that. Well, there aren't bike paths everywhere, and there aren't bike routes everywhere, and we are legally allowed to be on the road, and there are rules that govern us being on the road. And so we are vehicles, and the idea is not get bikes off the road. Nobody's advocating for that. What's being advocated for is share the road. And Mansfield, in particular, is supposed to be a bike-friendly community. It was voted a bike-friendly community.
We did a lot of work. Actually, Lon did a lot of work to make that happen.
That's right. So if it's a bike-friendly community, I should feel safe riding my bike in the town of Mansfield. Although this did not occur in Mansfield. It occurred in Windham.
Right. Well, this is great because I just made a note here, too. And it's what we need to do is we need to develop. And I'll talk to Lon about this because Bike Mansfield is very, very good about, you know, being active as far as advocacy goes. And what we need to do is develop a rule book for encountering an irate driver.
There you go. That's great.
It. I just made a note right here. So maybe next week, on next week's show, we'll talk about what we've come up with for some ideas for how to deal with that. And if anybody has any ideas about how you deal with an irate driver and in a calm and intelligent fashion.
And how to de-escalate.
Why don't you put it onto the Bicycle Talk Facebook page? I'd love to hear more about this. This is a great thing. I got to keep moving.
Because the first thing that we have to do is we have to not escalate ourselves.
Right, right. So further discussion on this and on the show on the Facebook page, Bicycle Talk, let us know how you feel about this because this is something that we do need to explore. And let's see if we can troubleshoot this a little bit and come up with a general rules of engagement when dealing with an irate driver when you're on your bicycle. I like this. I like this a lot. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to make this into a teaching and learning point. So this is very good. Thank you, Fran. Awesome. All right. It's what you do. Yeah. And on a positive side, the Steeplechase Bike Tour. It was last weekend.
That was fun.
Yeah, that was fun. And we had some, you know, weather, but, you know, it started out dry.
It rained from Franklin to Pomfret. 30 miles.
It started out dry. Yeah, Fran got wet.
You know how wet I got?
Can you tell that Fran got wet?
Really wet.
Yeah, really
wet. It was ridiculous.
Like you got power washed.
Should I have a discussion about various things you can do to treat your athlete's foot and tinea unguium?
We'll work on that in a little bit. Okay.
Yeah.
Right now, I just want to go a big shout out to the Steeplechase Bike Tour. We had a guest on last week from the Steeplechase, and we talked all about the Steeplechase Bike Tour, which was cool. Yes, we did, but you weren't here.
Who was it?
Because you were away. It was Dan Gerwin from Perception
Programs.
Oh, you had Dan
Gerwin.
Programs.
That's so exciting.
Yeah. from Dan from Perception Programs.
No, so, I was bicycling on that very day and possibly at that very moment. I was bicycling in a very bicycle-positive city.
I would also like to do a positive side on, I had a meeting this week with some folks from the downtown business community in Windham. And this meeting was commandeered by a meeting that I had with the new town manager and also the captain of the Willimantic Fire Department, who actually arranged the whole thing, Mark Scrivener. And I went to a meeting with them and talked about what my vision of how downtown Willimantic could benefit from the airline trail in town and why having it where it is right now, which is secluded and unmarked in many ways because there's no signage to show you where to go and all, how it wasn't really perfect for a cyclist. So I gave a presentation. I put together a PowerPoint presentation, and I put it together from, you know, behind the bars of a bicycle, basically, behind the handlebars of a bike as a cyclist sees it. I saw a couple of critical intersections that were what I would call dangerous and poorly planned out that I revised and came up with positive solutions for it. And I sat in front of a bunch of business owners in downtown Willimantic, some people that were involved in politically in the community. It was really cool because
who stand to gain if bicycles drive by their establishments because they're gonna spend money in their establishments?
The business people that were there, most of them have heard this from me, but there were a couple that were new that had not gone through this. Actually, the ones that I talked to that I was hoping would show up because they went, yeah, Ron, go, let's do this, you know, because I had they're the ones that didn't show up, but then others did. So we had our favorite jeweler there. We had our favorite cupcake person there. And others that were in the folks from the craft store, the Stillwater. They were there. There were lots of people
Swiftwater.
There. Swiftwater, that's it. And so anyway, the concept is to take the airline trail and move it on where it comes in from the north. Not have it continue all the way out to the end of Union Street and then have a very hazardous crossing right there, but have it go to Valley Street Extension, which then brings you to a traffic light, which then gives you a safe way to turn onto Jackson Street and to line out Jackson Street with bike lanes on both sides. That's the beginning part of it. And then from there, it's Sharrows and the road all the way up and down Main Street, bicycle racks coming into town, much more of a welcome to Willimantic kind of idea. You know, bicycles are good here. The folks at the coffee shop love bicycles.
Yeah.
The person who owns the cupcake store, she said she has a couple that comes in once a week. They ride out from Hebron. They stop to get a cupcake, and then they ride back.
That's so cute.
And they're using the airline trail on which to do that. So this is like there's money to be had here. There's a really positive building process that can be done with this. So I'm just really excited. I had 18 people there. I put together this really cool presentation, and I'm just really excited. And I thank Jim Rivers and the city of Willimantic for allowing me to be there and do this.
Town of Windham.
And I had the chief of police there, and I have the captain of the Willimantic Fire Department there.
That's
so there were some very good people there that really heard it and heard what I had to say. So anyway, that's my positive side. I'm really excited by that. Stay tuned. I'll have more information on that in the future. But this is when I tell people on my show that it's time to get out and know your town and get to know who these people are and what you can do to take action and get involved. This is what I'm talking about right here. So I'm feeling a bit proud of myself, but it was a good thing. Okay, the maintenance minute is next. The maintenance minute comes off of yet another situation that we have with Fran's bike. And once again, because Fran's bike is always
driving me crazy.
It's always ridden because she rides her bike a lot, so she wears things out. When is it time to replace worn parts?
Now.
Yeah, like right now. So what we're doing now is we have a new derailleur coming in for the front derailleur on her bike. Front derailleurs, in general, do not wear out that quickly. And yours isn't really worn out. What yours is it has been dripped on by various fluids, including those coming out of your water bottle and other places on your body. The set screws on your derailleur have seized to the point where they cannot be broken loose. I soaked them forever. And then the other thing is the actual parallelogram on the derailleur itself, where it pivots back and forth, has become so corroded that it's a little sticky as far as the way it shifts.
Oh,
so these are things you need to look at.
Don't even get me started.
So while I was working on the bike, I also I realigned the rear derailleur hanger. That's a must do whenever you're working on anybody's bike. If you're putting a new cassette or a new chain on, one of the first things I do is I pull the rear derailleur off and I put a tool in which checks to see what the alignment is on the derailleur hanger, because it's important to know. If you don't know anything about that, you can find out more about it if you go onto the Park Tool site online, and they'll probably have a video or some sort of instruction to show you how to use that tool. Great tool, very, very useful. Anyway, when I put the derailleur back on, and now I had the bike without a chain on it, because I was replacing the chain and the cassette, I grabbed onto the derailleur and I found that there's lateral play in the rear derailleur. It's been used so much that the pivot points are starting to loosen up on the rear derailleur. I wish they had loosened up more on the front derailleur, but they didn't. And on the rear derailleur, they have started to loosen up. So when is it time to replace it? Pretty soon. Probably next season, you're going to get a new rear derailleur on your bike too.
Okay.
Because what happens is you'll find that your shifting isn't as crisp and clean as it was originally. And that's partly due to... Well, one can be the alignment of the rear hanger. The other can also be the actual amount of play there is in the rear derailleur, especially on these new, anything that's over 8-speed, anything that's 9-speed, 10-speed, 11-speed, they all have a tendency to be very, very finicky about how they operate. So everything has to be exactly right. So we're going to do that this winter. That'll be a good winter project. For now, it'll get her through. It'll get her through the rest of the season. But eventually, you have to start looking at these things. And then you start taking a look at the miles that are on it. I mean, Franny's got, I'm sure there's well over 10,000 miles on that rear derailleur. Probably more. Probably a lot more. Maybe closer to 20.
What year did I get that bike? I don't actually remember.
It's been a while. The bike's getting up there. So things wear out.
Yeah.
Things wear out. The other thing I need to do with that bike is, and I talked to the folks, the bike mechanic folks from the Farm to Fork Fondo about this, is I need to pull the bearings out of the front and rear wheels and press in new sealed bearings, because they're starting to get a little play in them also. So just little things, that's all. And that play in the rear hub, too, can also contribute to shifting issues. So there's things you have to start paying attention to. And I mean... that's a long time for those hubs to go that long, but they're fulcrum hubs and they're rebuildable, and I can rebuild them. So that's what we're going to do this winter. We got some projects.
You have the technology.
I have the technology. I just need to order up some bearings, figure out what size they are. I have to have you not riding on the bike for a little while so I can tear it all down and do it. That's all.
Yeah.
But, well, you know, when we get into winter, we usually switch over to cross bikes, and so it's
and
not
Pinarellos.
Really. And then you also have your spare bike, too, if you need it. So. Anyway, here's what I want to talk about today, though. This is important stuff. You know what's happening this weekend?
Farm to Fork Fondo, Pennsylvania Dutch.
That's true. It is happening this weekend. But the other thing that's happening this weekend is an annual event, which has been happening for 74 years.
A reason for me to get my nails done.
And a reason for you to get your nails done, of course. We'll explain that in a minute. The Vuelta a España is this weekend.
Yeah.
Yay. So it is the 74th edition of the Tour of Spain, and it begins this weekend. And it, according to my information here, the 2019 route promises to be an explosive affair with an individual and team time trial and 8 uphill finishes.
Okay. Oy vey.
Taking place between August 24th and September 15th, the 74th edition will set off from Salinas de Torrevieja. You're going to have to help me here because you're much better at this.
And Salinas de Torrevieja. You know Torrevieja. You know what a Torrevieja is?
I'm sure you're going to tell me, though.
It's an old tower.
Okay, so that's where it goes from there to there. And then it finishes in Madrid after 3,272.2 kilometers of racing. So big time coming up, the Vuelta a España. It is a 3-week grand tour of cycling that is scheduled, to take place in Spain, also in France. It says Spain, Andorra, and France.
You know what a Salina is?
What's Andorra?
Andorra is a little tiny country. I think it's a completely, I'll look it up for you, but Andorra is one of those little teeny tiny countries like Monaco and Liechtenstein
and Luxembourg.
And, yeah. Right. It's it's really tiny. It might be completely surrounded by Spain. I'll look it up for you.
Okay. So anyway, it's
don't you want to know what a Salina is?
We'll get there in a minute. Okay. So Spain, Andorra, and France between the 24th of August and 15th of September. And it will be the final Grand Tour of the 2019 season. The other Grand Tours being the Giro d'Italia and the Tour de France. So here we go. And it is scheduled to start with a team time trial. This is interesting. The Tour de France did this year, too. They had this team time trial early in the race. I like that concept. I like it a lot. It's very interesting. It helps the grand riders, the GC riders, get themselves established, and it's a good team concept. And so anyway, I think that's really cool. So that's what's going on there. We've got a bunch of information on everything you need to know about the Vuelta a España. So that's the Wikipedia page. We're going to move on beyond that one. That just gave us some general information. The pre-race favorites, Steven Kruiswijk from Jumbo Lotto anymore. It's the Jumbo team. Primo Roglic from, both from Team Jumbo Visma. So they're both pre-race favorites. Miguel Angel Lopez.
Angel.
Okay. And Jacob Fuglsang.
Yeah, Jakob They say Fuglsang.
Fuglsang.
They just skip a
lot
both of the,
from the Astana
letters
team,
in the middle.
From the Astana team.
Yeah.
Nairo Quintana and the 2019 Giro d'Italia champion, Richard Caparaz. Movie star team.
Yeah.
Okay. Are considered among the pre-race favorites. There are some others in there too, but anyway, we've got it should be very interesting. I'm very interested to see that this team Jumbo Visma, which was Jumbo Lotto before, they are coming on. They're something to look at. They've really come a long way.
That's because they ride Bianchis.
Yeah, they do ride Bianchi bicycles. When I was working for Bianchi Bicycle, they were kind of like, who are these guys? And now it's like, ooh, check these guys out. I think they're one of the up and coming teams. They're very, very interesting to watch. They're working well together. They've got some great riders with them. And so anyway, it should be interesting to see. So the interesting thing is Nairo Quintana, he's
Quintana.
Okay, Fran. He's won this one before, as well as the Giro d'Italia. So it would be interesting to see how he does. And then, of course, the Giro champion this year was Richard Caparaz. Carapaz. Mm-hmm. So anyway, there's going to be, it should be interesting. It should be very, very interesting to see. The first stage is that team time trial. It is 18 kilometers and it's a team time trial. It gets really, really interesting. I was looking over the different stages as we go along. And as I did with the Tour de France this year, I'm going to walk my way through that today too, so we can kind of take a look at what we have up ahead of us. 2018, past winners. Simon Yates won last year. Chris Froome the year before. Nairo Quintana in 2016. Fabio Aru from Astana in 2015. Alberto Contador from Spain in 2014, Chris Horner from the United States was riding for Radio Shack that year, and he won in 2013. So, Contador again. No, it wasn't that long ago. Vincenzo Nibali. There's some good, really good, interesting names. Contador. Wow, look at this. One, two, three. He's won it three times. Three times Contador has won. So, very, very interesting. That is going to be a fun race to watch if you have a chance to watch it. You have to kind of have the right media of which to watch this on, which I do, so I can't wait. So it should be very, very nice. And we can even watch it when we're not at home, dear.
Okay.
So anyway, we're going to go take a look at this on the 2019 route here real quick. Generally, the first is the team time trial. Of course, we talked about this, and the route is it's pretty flat by the looks of 13.4 on the TT. I thought I had a breakdown here. Race opens with a flat. Yes, here it is. Flat 13.4 kilometer team time trial on the Costa Blanche. Say it there, Miss Spanish-speaking person.
Does it, well,
Blance, southeast of Spain.
Blance. Oh, it's going to be
Blance.
It's going to be if it's. It depends if it's France or Spain. And if it's on the border,
in the southeast of Spain. Thank you.
And it's Blance.
Okay, Blance. Okay. Stage two gets very interesting. It's Benidorm to Calpe, and it's 199.6 kilometers, so it's a pretty long race. But it goes over that a Category 2 climb and then a Category 3 climb. The profile is very impressive. It starts out hilly and then eventually rolls down to flat with one small Category 2 climb at the near the end. So anyway, should be interesting to see. It's almost 200 kilometers. That's stage two. It's what they call a lumpy affair from Benidorm to Calpe. Stage's main difficulty will be Alto de Puig, Lorenca, a steep climb which has been featured twice as a summit finish to the Cumbre de Sol. This is also in Benidorm. This is where... Jan Boland from Benidorm Sports in Canton, Connecticut. It's where she won her world championship.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's why it's yeah. the show
that's why,
it's
why they call
Benidorm.
It Benidorm. Yeah. Yeah, Benidorm Bicycles, right. So big shout out to Jan, if she's listening. And so anyway, that is where Benidorm came from, the name Benidorm came from. So anyway, stage three looks like it's probably a sprint finish, you know, definitely downhill to flat finish at the very end. So, and that one will be 188 kilometers. Stage four, we go back into basically good flatland stuff again. One little bump on it, and that's it. And then it's going to be, you know, sprint finish. There's probably going to be a couple of small breakaways. It'll probably get sucked in. That's usually what happens on those. Stage five, things start to get a little more interesting. 170 kilometers with a Category 1 at the very finish, which looks just horribly nasty and steep. And it's... The Observatory, I can't say any of these. Anyway, it's 1950 meters at the end. So, and it's an uphill finish. So it looks really interesting. And that will be on Wednesday, August 28th. Stage six on the 29th, 198.9 kilometers. Long day in the saddle, almost 200 kilometers. Another third category summit finish. And then stage seven on Friday the 30th, and we're looking at 183 kilometers, and tough finishes come thick and fast. And this is first category testing finish off of a grueling stage seven that takes in four other categorized climbs. So I see a three, a two, a three, a two, and a category one finish on that one. So keep your eyes open on August 30th, things are going to start get very, very interesting. These sharp, steep climbs at the end are really, they're very, very challenging, and they can change races. Because they're super short, they don't necessarily change it for a lot, but if you pop enough of them in a row, then you can certainly get some gain here. On Saturday, August 31st, this one is 166 kilometers. And it's got another Category 2 climb on it, fairly steep, but just a category two. Sunday, September 1st. Now we're starting to look at some big, big hills. 94 kilometers, short, definitely. It leaves Spain and it heads into Andorra on stage 9 with a short, brutal mountain stage that should have major impact on the GC. The race finished to Cortals de Encamp at 2,095 meters. So there is a Category 1. There is a Beyond Category. There are two Category 2s finishing up and that step up into a Category 1. This is the race to watch. Sunday, September 1st. If you're anywhere near some media to check it out, that's going to be a really, really interesting day because it's short, but it's brutal. It's just a pounding, pounding stage. You're either going up or going down. It's incredible. So that just looks really exciting to me. And then on stage 10, of course, we go back to the flatlands for 36 kilometers because it is a time trial and it's the day after a rest day. So this will actually be on Tuesday. So they'll get Monday off. And then the next day, it's an individual time trial, 36 kilometer individual time trial. So pretty long. And then moving on from there, we go to stage 11, which is a little lumpy one. Again, it goes begins in France. And it leads back into Spain after an up and down day in the Basque Country. So it looks like ideal time for breakaways and for the grand, you know, the GC teams are likely to try to help their leaders recover from the time trial ahead of the mountains to come. Stage 12, again, 174 kilometers. It's got a couple of short but tough Category 3 climbs on it, but they're real short. So, again, shouldn't have tremendous amounts of influence there. Just little leg breakers. Stage 13 on Friday, September 6th. this one's 166 kilometers. An unlucky Stage 13 is going to be hard. Seven climbs, including a tough final ascent to Los Machucos, which was last featured in 2017. We're looking at a beyond category finish on this. It's ugly. It just looks nasty. There's one, two, three, four category threes, two category twos, and a beyond category. So, and the beyond category is a finish line. That's going to be nice. Interesting. So the 13th of September, the 13th stage, which is the 6th of September, is going to be a very, very interesting race indeed. And then September 7th, we back down into Roly Flats, mainly set up for sprinters. Once again, stage 15, Sunday, September 8th. Here we go again, another one. It's back into the mountains, summit finish. Three Category 1 climbs in the northwest of Spain. And yeah, three Category 1s, and then a final Category 1 at the end. Just looks really ugly, nasty. Just, this is going to be good spectator stuff. And then Sunday, September 9th, once again, let's do it again. 144 kilometers, two Category 1 climbs, and the finish, beyond category climb. So beyond category adds a lot of ugly to the Category 1s. It's really, really difficult. So stage 17, things kind of flatten out a bit. Doesn't look too bad. 219 kilometers, so it's the longest stage, and it's one of three sprinter-friendly days in the final weeks in the center of Spain. Stage 18, Wednesday, September 12th. Why not have just another punishing hilly race the day after your flat race? Here we go. One, two, three, four Category 1 climbs with a killer descent. Going down almost 25 kilometers to the finish. That's going to be a crazy, crazy descent. That should be interesting to see. It'll make for a good watch. And stage 19 on Thursday, September 13th. Again, starts out up in over a Category 3 climb, which is very, very short. And then it just kind of rolls itself downhill all the way into the 165-kilometer finish. Friday, September 14th, once again, the Tour de Spain is one of my favorites. Tour of Italy, the Giro d'Italia, also one of my favorites because they're just punishing. They just, they do not let up. So this one is 190 kilometers. It has one category one, two category ones, two category twos, and two category three climbs. It's just a giant roller coaster. So it should be very interesting. It's getting towards the end of the actual event. So it may be one of those last ditch efforts for someone to gain some extra minutes and move themselves around on the podium. And then stage 21, boy, it doesn't get any flatter than that. That's our last day. That's the promenade into Madrid. So 106 kilometers. It's a processional sprint stage into Madrid, bringing to a close the 2019 edition of the Vuelta a España. So that's the Vuelta this year. It looks really interesting. Seems like kind of a cool race. I thought it was laid out at the level of difficulty as only the Tour de Spain can do that. So that's interesting. I have a little bit of information here, too. We're hearing all sorts of things about things that are coming out of China, production that's coming out of China. A lot of the bicycle industry is coming out of China. And there was a threat of a tariff on the 1st of September, which that threat has been pulled back for most of the consumed goods that are coming into the country, thinking that they will not put these tariffs back on, or the Trump administration will not be putting these tariffs back on until after the holidays. So it's been postponed until December. Unless, of course, you have bicycle helmets and lights and other items that are in the bicycle industry. So while President Donald Trump announced Tuesday that his administration will delay some of the new tariffs on Chinese imports until December 15th, most bicycle products remained on the list subject to increased tariffs September 1st. Items subject to the new 10% tariff include helmets and lights, which were previously exempted on safety grounds. Balance bikes, however, are considered toys and will not be subject to the new tariff until December 15th. So, on another note, talking about the current administration, Trump promotes light-speed bicycles at White House Showcase. So down in Chattanooga, Tennessee, the American Bicycle Group, which has said it has grown 70% in recent years and added 18 new jobs at its facility here, was honored at that White House Made in America product showcase in mid-July. American Bike Group's Lightspeed brand was featured at the event, and President Donald Trump visited its tent at the White House lawn, and chatted with the CEO and later mentioned the company's growth in a speech. So, yes, it's an American product line. Yes, it's it hangs lots of Asian product on their machines to sell their machines. We don't manufacture much as in a way of components here in the United States. These frames, by the way, are primarily titanium frames. They are primarily a couple thousand dollars or more per frame. This is what we're making here. We're making this really high-end products. It's very, very nice that it's being promoted by the Trump administration, but it doesn't fit into what most of us can afford. So if we're going to be able to afford a bicycle and be able to ride a bicycle, much of our product is still going to come out of Asia.
Well, aren't Trek and Specialized American companies?
But they're not made here.
Oh.
They're not made here. Oh. So that is...
So the Lightspeed frames are made here?
Yes.
Oh.
They're made in Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Oh, I see.
Uh-huh.
That's kind of good.
Yeah.
Well, why can't Trek and Specialized make frames here?
Because they can't make them at a competitive price here. I mean, Lightspeed is doing it. They're making them. Are they competitive? I don't know. They're unique. And by being unique, that means that they make a product that none of the big manufacturers are focusing on.
Yeah.
So if because they're making a titanium product, then that's what it is. So I think that as I look at the calendar, I believe the Tuesday night series is over
at the Rat.
Yeah, I think so. I'm not seeing it showing up here. You can double check that. You can fact check me on that.
By the way, Salinas is a salt mine.
Okay.
You know, it begins with sal. So okay. Salina is a salt mine. Salinas is a place where there are salt mines.
Yeah.
So you said Salinas de Torrevieja. That's the salt mines at the old tower.
Okay.
Now you know.
Okay. So another thing. So we're on the calendar right now because we're coming to an end here. So as far as that goes, I do have some things that are interesting in here. Cyclocross. Here it comes. I mean, we've got other things coming on. We've got the Green Mountain Stage Race, which is a really big stage race up in Vermont, and that certainly is happening. But there's a bunch of other stuff going on now in cross. And so the cross calendar is just starting to light up right now, including the CCAP Youth Cyclocross Camp, which started on the 17th this year. And now we move on to Competitive Edge up in Massachusetts, Springfield area. They have cross at Blunt Park in Springfield, Massachusetts. And that is coming up on the 25th of this month. And of course, the CCAP Oyster Cross Training Series begins on the 27th. And on the 28th, there is the Rocky Hill Cyclocross Series. The Rocky Hill Cyclocross Series, by the way, is open to everyone. And you can, if you're thinking about doing cyclocross, I will try to get someone from that group on the air here with me, because there's some good training races that are coming up if you want to play around with the idea of doing cross. Are you an injured runner that is looking for some way to take care of your competitive spirits and you want to give this a try? The races are 45 minutes long. They're short, they're sweet, they hurt like heck, but you know what? They're a lot of fun, and it's a great way to learn how to handle a bike, race a bike, and get your feet wet in the whole cross thing. Good friend of mine, Paul Hermes, ended up giving it a shot a few years ago, and he's like totally hooked. Can't get him off his cross bike anymore. And so anyway, this happens. It's a great way to get yourself out there and give it a try. So go to Bike Reg and check out the calendar and see what's coming up, because there's a lot of stuff coming up. And then this calendar, I think this actually came from the NEBRA, New England Bicycle Racing Association calendar. And you can go there, too. There is a calendar section. It'll give you all the different races that are happening in New England, so including other big ones. Quad Cross, I think, is the first big kickoff up in Massachusetts. Actually, it looks like they change it over to New Hampshire. So Quad Cross is the first one up, and that will be on the 8th of September, followed by Gateway Hills Cross, which is in Nashua, New Hampshire. There's another one on the 7th called Hydra Cross in Holyoke. So there's tons and tons of cross races coming up. First one in Connecticut is Newtown Cross on September 22nd. And then we also have the Midnight Ride of Cyclocross on the 21st. So there's a lot of stuff there. Deer Farm Cross at Newfield, Maine is coming up soon. Tons of bicycle cyclocross racing going on. In October, we move on to the Gloucester Grand Prix of Cyclocross in Ipswich. It is the largest in Gloucester. And that is the largest cyclocross race in New England. That will be the 5th and the 6th, the entire weekend. On the 12th, there will be Mansfield Hollow Cyclocross. And there will also be, a few different ones here. Boy, we got a couple of different races happening. The MRC race, which is the one that's always been going on October 13th. And then there's another one in Wrightsville Dam. I'm not sure about that one. That looks like a new one. Brody Cross, another one of the New England series. There's just so many races coming up. So if you're looking to do cross, this is the time to be looking. Farm to Fork Fondos, Fran and I are off to Pennsylvania this weekend, and Fran will be riding, and I will be talking a lot. And Fran will also be helping, because she is the volunteer extraordinaire, by the way. You are.
Nice.
You are.
Yeah.
So my name is Petal and Ron, and you've been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you've been listening to this live or on podcast and you'd like to comment, you can send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also listen to more and past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show or be on the show as a guest, please send me an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Petal and Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Storrs.